Welcome to the Kimapa podcast with me, Jared Kimber, and Robbie Utapa. I can't even speak. I can't even say my own name. Wait. What a time to get a frog in your throat. What I wanted to say is the man who faced 1,679 dot balls in T20
cricket. Dot balls. Yes.
Do you think you faced more dot balls or more singles?
I think more singles.
1,595 singles. So you're not far away. It's about 50-50. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, it's
fine. 200 sixes. You also scored 3 fives, which is the reason you're on the show, if we're being honest. It's the 3 fives.
Thank you.
I think is the most important thing for me. In fact, we saw some overthrows at all sorts of things yesterday. I thought maybe the best way to start would be with having a look at the table. Because yesterday there were some shifts. There was some movement at the station that we had yesterday. So this is how I feel, and I want to know how you're feeling about it. I kind of feel that the top three sides at the moment, this is on the points table, which I don't agree with the points table at all, because one team has played 8 games and others have played 10. But if you just look at those top three sides on their own, I like the top three sides quite a bit, right? And then everyone else, I have a question mark over. I think Delhi and Lucknow are still in a very good position to get a playoff spot. I think Punjab and KKR obviously could still get there as well without any issues at all. But I feel like there's a clear delineation now between the top three sides and then the three sides under that who might all be fighting for one spot.
Yeah. And I have a feeling that number four and number five are actually going to ruffle, shake up those top three there. They're not far from each other. And teams at odd points, they are dangerous sides. I have a feeling that Punjab Kings are going to squeeze into that top four one way or the other. And DC don't look far at all. So someone in that top four is going to get ousted in my view. Because I think Punjab are going to make it there.
Oh, okay. So you think Delhi is the team that Punjab can take down?
See, they're one victory away from being at number, three? In fact, maybe, at number three, right? Or four.
Yeah. Well, they've got the draw, don't they? So Punjab's next game is CSK. So let's assume, based on current form, that they win that game, right? Mm. Then that takes them up to 6-3, but with a spare point from the washout, right? So they will go to 13 points after 10 games, which gets them in a really good position. And if you look at Delhi's next game is KKR. So it's a bit tougher because KKR is still pushing for a spot, right? So if they both win, then there shouldn't be a change. But if they do win, Punjab can actually jump up quite a bit. I think Delhi has probably, outside of that KKR game, one of the tougher runs on the way home. But they do have their next two games are KKR and Sunrisers, right? But the game after that is Punjab. So realistically, it might just be the deciding game between the two sides that ends up doing it. And then the good game that Punjab have is last game of the year they play Rajasthan when Rajasthan have nothing left to play for. Doesn't mean that Rajasthan, some player isn't playing for their contract next year and doesn't make 150 or something and ruin it. But it does mean that there is an element of that, you know, that you can get through there. So it's fascinating. And then you got KKR who are considerably a long way behind, but at the same time, can go on a bit of a run themselves, right?
Well, when you look at the way KKR have been playing, especially in the last three games, you just feel like something's off. Don't you think so? That's what I felt. As in, when I looked at that side and just the way they've played, just feel like confidence is not there for some reason. Or like, do you feel that as well?
Well, you know how I felt. I always felt that the top three wasn't quite locked in. And the middle order hasn't quite made the runs that we wanted them to make. And so, the word I think you're looking for is fragile. They look a little bit fragile, right? Like where you just like, it just doesn't look solid. But if you look at their run coming up, they've got the DC game. If they manage to win the DC game, they then play Rajasthan, CSK and Sunrisers after that, right? Now, their last game's against RCB, so it might all fall down on its face by that point. But they might be playing RCB, right, when RCB already have a top two spot sewn up, right? So RCB might be like, well, let's just rest a couple of players and go through to the next game. Yeah, go through to the playoffs.
I don't think they'll do that. Would you? I wouldn't.
I would rest anyone who had a niggle, and I would rest anyone who requested it. if someone was tired, especially a bowler, fast bowler, I'd be like, if you want a game off, this is the game to have off.
I think
I'm just saying, if it gets that far, it's still they still have to beat Delhi in the next game, KKR. But I expected Mumbai and KKR to go on a run, and so far one team has and one team hasn't, right? But because KKR have this nice little thing ahead of them, so we've talked about you. So you still like Delhi a little bit by the sound of that, then?
Yeah, I think Delhi have lost a little bit of momentum, but you'd rather lose a little bit of momentum here at this stage than losing it, you know, at the 12th game, you know, where you feel like you're playing the last two games and you're up against the grain and you don't have momentum with you. They can still build momentum from here on in and carry that momentum through to the back end of the tournament, right? Yeah. The second and the knockouts, the playoffs, right? You don't want to lose momentum beyond this, right? Right now, I think just maybe 20% of momentum they've lost, they can regain. They can regain their footing at this point in time. But if they lose the next two games, then it becomes hard work for them.
Yeah.
Because right now, I still think they're sitting pretty.
So their next two games are KKR and Sunrisers. They, at worst, they should split that and go 1-1.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, realistically. Yeah. So, and then,
like, for me, if you ask me DC versus KKR, who has momentum going their way, I would say DC would have momentum going their way. With Sunrisers, they've decided to stay with the way they play right now, in the sense of their template of just going hammer and tongs in those first six overs. And if they lose wickets, there's no mitigation plan there. And so for me, that's where I feel like they don't have a backup plan. It's because they don't have a backup plan, I feel like they find themselves between a rock and a hard place. And when you don't have momentum going your way and you're being stubborn about one form or one template of playing, and that's not working, you read the situation and assess the situation. I don't think they're doing that. And I don't think they have a backup plan with the way they're playing. Much like RCB, right? I think RCB today have pivoted with, especially in the last three games, if you see the way Virat has played, I think a clear role has been defined to Virat, saying that, listen, it does not matter if you're batting at 125, 130 strike rate. You being there is more important for us than the pace at which you play and you score your runs. And that has shown, that has clearly shown them that if Virat plays that sheet anchor role, especially if they're chasing down a score, then everyone around him, it's up to them to up the ante and play at a much much higher strike rate. If you look at their team,
it kind of makes sense, because they've got a bunch of guys who basically want to score 15 to 25 runs, right? Like a lot of their players are short stay players, right? So it makes a lot more sense to say we need one guy to stay all the way through and everyone else to hit around it, which is similar, I suppose, to the Sunrisers. But the thing with the Sunrisers is, even when they did pivot, like Travis Head was, what, 20 off 20 and couldn't get going in one game, and the other game he batted too slow. Like, it looks like just a form thing to me, right? Like it basically comes down to me that form is the bigger thing. And in a short season like this, you can ride form almost all the way through the season. And look at Lucknow at the start of the year, like essentially riding the form of Puran. His form has dropped off and suddenly they're in a different position. I just want to talk about Lucknow because they're fascinating, because they've played 10 games, they're 5-5, and they're obviously a very big chance of making it to the playoffs. But when you look at their upcoming games, it is so tough. They play Punjab, RCB, GT, and then Sunrisers, right? Coming up. So that is four tough games in a row. And they basically, you know, they basically have to win a lot of them. And they also have, what's their net run rate is minus, right? So I think, I just don't see how they make it unless something completely changes for them. Whereas because Punjab have the extra point, and they are a game behind because they've only lost three games and had the tie at the moment. I think there's something a little bit there, and they've got the positive on the points as well. So there's even though those two teams are near each other on the table, they're in a completely different world when it comes to where they are in the league at the moment. I think Sunrisers for me just can't do it. Right. And what you're seeing here is, I'd be fascinated to see what you think about this. My problem with the Sunrisers is they've always been one side of the ball. They've always been the batting has to do like 80% of the work. And over time, there's always going to be a regression. We saw that when, remember when Pakistan always had really good bowlers and their batters only ever made 155. It's like, well, one day your bowlers aren't going to be able to stand up and your batters can't win you a game. And Sunrisers are really similar with that. And then you add in a little bit of form. And as you said, maybe the inflexibility, or it could also be that they don't have a squad set up to be as flexible as some of the other squads because they're all set up to go all in. But it, in a short tournament like this, it can either go completely right for you or completely wrong. And I think at the moment, we've seen it just go wrong for them. And last year, it went right.
Last year, it went... See, the thing is, it went right for the most part. But I believe, Jared, I think if you want to win tournaments, then your bowling has to do well. It's the bowlers that win you tournaments. Your batters win you matches, but your bowlers win you tournaments, right? Your bowling has to do consistently well.
Yeah.
And you look at every team that has won the IPL. They've had a really solid, I can't even think of maybe two teams that have won the IPL on the back of their batting. You know, the people in the comments can let us know if teams have won strictly on the back of their batting. Very few teams have won. Even when, say, CSK won in 2021, I would say 2020, 2018, even it was their bowling that actually carried them through. It's the bowling that actually made the difference. I remember in 2014 when we won in KKR as well. It was our bowling that actually did exceptionally well to have actually won us that tournament. Our batting did well. We did do well as batters, but it was the bowling that helps you win championships, win you those crucial games. And I feel like you look at RCB today. Why are they at that position today? It's because their bowlers, like Hazelwood yesterday, you know, or the previous game, where the way he bowled, you know, in the death, in the Bangalore game, even, you know, those victories, they fly under the radar at the end of the year, but it's those victories that carry you through to the end of the tournament. And I don't think SRH have had that in the last year or so. Even though they've done well as a batting unit, KKR knew last year. It is about getting Abhishek Sharma and Travis Head out early. If you could get them out early, they would literally be on the mat. And that is exactly what happened. As it was Mitchell Stark's performance in that death, in that final game that helped them win the championship. So I feel your bowlers will play a huge part, which is why I'm backing Punjab Kings with the likes of Narshdeep Singh, with Marco Jansen there, who have been bowling pretty well this season. And they've brought Harpreet Brar into the mix as well. I think they're miscalculating with their batting a little bit by sending, say, like in the previous game, they sent Shashank Singh behind Maxwell, when Shashank Singh has done exceptionally well against KKR, especially in KKR. So a little bit of miscalculations there, but I think their bowling for the most part has been holding good for me. You look at DC even, I think yesterday's decision to bowl Mukesh ahead of in that penultimate over ahead of Mitchell Stark was the wrong call. And Starkey has been bowling really well for them in the death, and they didn't use him. You look at MI today, Bumrah's back in the play right now. With the way he's bowling, they're utilizing their spinners well. Trent Bolt is bowling well at the top of the innings for the most part. So they're doing well. Look at GT. Why are they at the top of the table today? Is because of the way they're bowling. Prasidh Krishna, Siraj, all of these guys are bowling really well. Sai Kishore with the ball. Even though Rashid isn't coming off, bang bang.
He's bowling better now, though. Since we've talked about him, he started to come
yes.
through. I just want to go back on something you said, though, and explain the form point. So RCB are probably in the top two teams in this tournament at the moment. I'd have Mumbai probably just a tier below them because they've been playing some of the poorer sides over recent times. They might still be at that tier, but I just need to see it a little bit more. But RCB are clearly in the top two sides at the moment. But Krunal Pandya and Josh Hazelwood, the chances of getting one of them having a great wicket-taking season is pretty low, right? Hazelwood's only done it like once or twice in T20 cricket throughout his career. And Krunal Pandya very rarely takes a lot of wickets. When you get a form situation where you have two bowlers who are doing something that they don't normally do at the same time, it completely changes the team. Because if this was just a defensive bowling team, what we were talking about before with Virat being able to just play at a strike rate of 120, it's a different game. He might not be able to do that. He might have to put more pressure on himself and bat in a different way. But because Hazelwood is getting so many wickets and Krunal Pandya is getting far more than you would expect of a bowler like him. I mean, he's gone through seasons barely getting wickets before, right? Very good defensive bowler, but not getting wickets. So sometimes it's little things like that that just click into place. And then you look at another side where you're like, well, they've got the pieces, but it hasn't actually come together. Like, if you think of what Sunrisers did, Sunrisers were like, okay, well, we need wickets. So we're going to go and get Mohammad Shami and we're going to get Adam Zampa, right? And we'll get a bunch of wickets. And it just hasn't happened. Right. And those are two proven wicket takers. So, you know, things like that, they can just go in any direction. I think we're now starting to see for the first time, like a really, like we can, I think we, Lucknow were probably above where they should have been on the table for a long period of time. And they're starting to settle into a position, probably more where they would finish the year. And then, as you said, there's that fourth position, I think is a bit of a cluster, which I think is, which is going to be fun towards the end of the year. All right. I want to talk to you about Pathirana. Right? Did you ever face Pathirana? I don't know if I've asked you this before. Have you faced Pathirana?
Of course.
So I looked up your numbers versus someone else, a guy who bowls like Pathirana. So Lassith Malinga, what do you think your batting average was in T20 cricket versus Lassith Malinga? Remember that cricket is a funny game. 100 years before we protected our head, players looked after their groins. So don't be as stupid as old cricketers. Protect your computer now. NordVPN is the protection I use when facing cyber shortballs or when rights issues try to dismiss me. Geo-block so you can watch all the cricket you want. Grab your NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/Kimber.
I have no idea. These are things I have no idea about you. And you,
I know you don't. That's why I ask you. Because I want you to get it spectacularly wrong so we can all make fun of you.
I don't know what my strike rate was against him.
I'll go with average. Did you go out to him average? Much?
I probably got out to him a few times. I think I've done decently well against him.
You averaged 82 against Lassith Malinga.
Against us.
Yeah. But, okay, give me your strike rate. Did you score off him?
Yeah, I thought I did. Not much.
No, you scored at less than a run a ball versus Lassith Malinga.
Oh,
strike rate, strike rate was 98, average 82. And the reason I did this is not to embarrass you, although I did just say that you average 82 against one of the best T20 bowlers of all time. But it's mostly because it's very hard against someone like him to dominate them in both ways, right? Like you can probably either find a method to stay in against them, or you could score against him, but it gets you out quite a bit. And we're seeing with Pathirana now, he was like Malinga when he was, you know, a year ago, and he's changed his action and he's bowling, I think they said about 20 centimeters higher, 17 centimeters
15
higher.
15 centimeters higher.
Is it 15? Is it? Yeah, I saw the graphic, but I was
15.
And if you have a look at his action, and he's suddenly getting hit for sixes in the way that he hasn't before. But before we get to that point, just explain to a normal cricket fan and get as technical as you want here, why it is so different facing someone like this than everyone else. And the most basic thing is everything you've done in your life, you've played hundreds of thousands of deliveries at that point, and all the deliveries come from up high above the bowler's head. How hard is it to train yourself to look in a different position?
It's quite hard. I remember when I first came up against Lassith, he was, you know, we played India A versus Sri Lanka A. This is back in 2005, I think. And he was bowling the red ball. He was very erratic and he was really quick, right? This is before his injuries and all of that. So he must have been bowling 150, 152 clicks and erratic, right? And I remember speaking to VVS Lakshman about this and asking Lachipa, how do you think I should approach it? And he said, just go back and do some visualization, see where you think his ball's going to come out of, and then kind of figure out, okay, how you want to play him. And we were playing a test match in Bangalore. He was bowling with a new ball. I was opening the batting. And he bowled the first ball and he ran in like, you know, Lassith runs in like that, right? He ran in like that. And then all of a sudden, he swings open. And then you're trying to just figure out where the ball comes from, right? And I was like, okay, where is this coming from? And then luckily, I thank my stars that it wasn't on me, but the first ball was a beamer and it was down leg side. And I got the last glimpse of the ball and suddenly saw it coming out of the umpire's head, right? You generally are expecting the ball from there and suddenly you see the ball being released right in front of the umpire's face. and it went, and I saw it, and I just saw a red cherry whiz past me at the back of my head from there. I'm like, ooh, okay. And I was like, first ball. Okay. Then the second ball, I was like, okay, just see if you can track the ball a little bit better. And then I started looking at, okay, the general area of the umpire, right? I started looking at the umpire, the general area of the umpire, because I saw the ball coming out of just that vicinity. So, okay, I'm just going to focus on the general area and be as defensive as, you know, operate from that survival state as much as possible, you know? And then the next ball in that general vicinity, the face and the chest area, the neck area of the umpire. So, like, okay, now by the fourth ball, I was like, okay, I'm just going to watch him run in. And as soon as he gets into that jump, I'm going to get into my initial moment and just focus on the umpire's head, that head region. And then I started picking him. So then started coming from the head region. So the focus always when it came to Lasith was that, okay, he's running in. And then as soon as he gets ready to get into delivery stride, I watch the umpire's head region, that face region. And then I slowly started picking the ball out of that. But as time went on and then I started getting comfortable, then I started picking him up from the umpire's face, start watching it from there, and then got used to that. But then with him, as time went on, the height of the ball moved from the umpire's like face region down to the neck and down to the chest. So by the time I was playing,
he got lower.
He went lower. So as time went by the time 2014 came around, I started picking him from the umpire's chest, neck and chest region, you know. And with Pathi Rana, it was the same thing. By the time I played him, I was like, okay, he was pretty low, right? Mm. And you could actually see that umpire's chest region, neck region is where you want to pick him up from. And I saw it as well this year. I was like, why is he getting hit? And then when I saw the release was off like 10 centimeters than before, it gives me an understanding as to, okay, now people are picking him. And I think everybody knows that someone like Pathi Rana, someone like Malinga, you want to be able to pick him up. You're going to focus on the umpire's, you know, chest and head region to be able to pick the ball up. So you get ready early and you kind of trying to capture the ball from that region. And you see if you can fierce focus a little bit more and pick up variations from there. Because the hardest thing to do with Lasith was that his variations were really deceptive. And when he was really good with his variations. Like his slower balls, his floaters, there was a, you know, he'd let the ball float out of his hands. And those were the hardest ones to pick up, right? And the quicker ones are slightly more easier. But the floaters are really, really hard. Initially, so after a point, as Lasith got even more dangerous with his variations, my mindset to him was, I got to make sure that we don't lose wickets to Lasith, because he was a lot like Trent Boult in the first three overs. Like if you gave a wicket to him in the first couple of overs, he was all over you, right? So as an opening batter, my whole prerogative was, I got to make sure that I get a runner ball to him, play to the merit, but make sure those first two overs, we don't give wickets to him, right?
So
if we don't give
wickets... One of the reasons I wanted you to talk about it is because I think the mechanical bit is part of it, right? So you having to understand, and you face Lasith Malinga quite a bit in the end, right? So you're going to get used to it. And as you say, you can make minor changes. It's still weird though, because every other bowler, you're looking in the same spot. You're just watching the ball all the way through. It's coming in the normal position. Then, as you said, you've got I always thought his best ball was a bit like you, was the one where it was just the slower ball that just dropped, because it dropped in a different way than any other ball, because he was bringing his hand under it, right? Whereas even Bravo and Harshal Patel, they go over the top of the ball. So to come over under the ball, is a very, very different thing. But then the third thing is that because that ball is so low, or the action is so low, that it's very hard to hit them for six, right? So if you look at Pathi Rana, and in 2023, he was hit for a six every 31 deliveries, right? Mm. In 2024, he was hit for a six every 24 deliveries. This year, he's being hit for a six every 11. That's not just IPL. That's all T20 cricket that he has played.
Yeah.
So one of the other issues is, once you get to that point, and I remember Cameron White was really good against Lasith Malinga for a short period of time, because Cameron White had that really textbook technique where he would just play through with a front arm and was really, really strong, and he would hit dead straight. Everyone else would have a slightly angled bat, and there's a chance it was going to go under your bat, right, at any stage, which is why he got all those other dismissals. So you had to hit him almost dead straight. That is what Pathi Rana was like last year and the year before that and the year before that. It's changed a little bit now. That slightly higher action has allowed for players to get under him a little bit more. And also, he's not in control of the action in the same way he was in other times. So we've got here that his median length this season is 4.6 meters compared to 6.8. So he's actually changing his lengths as well with his action. And he's not, he was always not in control of the ball. I think he used to be not in control of the ball more when it came to width, right? Whereas now he's not in control of the ball, I think, with length as much, which is why he's spraying the ball all over different places. But the point is that if you can retrain yourself as a professional to understand that the ball's going to come out of, I think with Pathoriner, it's probably just under the neck of the umpire, right? At the moment, you know, just look at, I'm just looking at that replay. It looks like it's around the neck throat area of the umpire. If you can get up and under that, though, he becomes more of a normal bowler again, doesn't he? Oh, sorry, what was that?
Yeah, he does. I was saying that I think he's slightly higher. I think he's more in the face region than the neck and the chest region, because I feel like if it's a neck and the chest, then it's harder to kind of get under the ball. The fact that the batters are able to get under him and they're trying to they're hitting him down a square leg, backward a square leg for fours and sixes. I think the fact that he's bowling slightly higher, and we've seen that about 10 centimeters higher than where he used to bowl, last year. And I think it's a matter of form. To be very honest, unless it's some form of injury that is not allowing him to bowl from a lower trajectory at this point in time.
Well, I think he's definitely changed his action, right? Like he has. Now, whether my guess is that's an injury, right? And something happened and he's changed it, but it hasn't improved him at the moment. And it might just be that that's the case, right? That he doesn't get back to that. But it's a fascinating transformation. And also, like, let's say that Pathorana is an outlier bowler, which I think is pretty safe. Let's compare him to like Chris Wokes, who's like Chris Wokes or Bhuvi Kumar. They're like conventional bowlers. When they have a problem, there's like 50 people they can talk to, right? There's 50, they can find a bowling coach anywhere. It's actually really tough. And this is my question with Pathorana is, and you could throw in other, you know, random players, like Fraser McGurk might be another player like this. When you play so differently to everyone else and you've got a method that isn't, that doesn't sit completely the same with everyone else's, there aren't as many people that you can go to. And so when you make a slight tweak, and we've seen that with mystery bowlers before, right? A mystery bowler will be really good. They'll make a slight tweak and suddenly everyone just hits them everywhere. It's actually really hard for those guys as well. So it's hard for you to face them, but it's also hard for Pathorana because all he has is the results, right? Like, and the SA20, I thought he was pretty ordinary in the SA20 considering how good he has been. You know, he's struggling a little bit here again in the IPL. His best ball is still as good as anyone's, but there's a lot of stuff in between it. So it's not like someone like you had a more traditional technique where you can make slight little things and you can talk to, you know, VVS Laxman or, you know, the batting coach you had when you were a kid. Pathoran is actually in a thing where you're kind of trying to work it out on your own. Like, it's a very different kind of world that he is playing than a lot of other professionals play in.
Well, to be honest, I think he still has people to go and speak to, right? I think the likes of a Lasith Malinga is someone he can actually reach out to and actually have a conversation with. And I like, you know, people often ask or say, okay, how is form such an aspect here, right? And form is an aspect, and the first thing that kind of goes off when you're not in form is the confidence to execute the most basic. Basic things that you would have done when there was confidence or there was form, right? And how does one address that? Obviously, one addresses that through a lot of grit, through a lot of determination and saying, okay, I'm going to figure out a solution for this, right? And for someone like him, he's a very soft-spoken kid. He's a very very affable, to be very honest. He's a great kid and hardworking. But he needs someone who can communicate to him in that language that he's most comfortable with and he understands and resonates with, right? It has to feel right in your gut, right? When you do something or when you're willing to try something out. Now for him, even someone to communicate to him that, okay, listen, you were 10 centimeters off from where you were last year. The height of the release of your delivery is 10 centimeters higher than where you were last year. Do you have it in you to go into practice and try delivering the same delivery from 10 centimeters lower? What does that feel like to you? Does that feel more natural to you? And he, like, to have that conversation in the middle of a season with somebody and is a really challenging one, right? And he's been off color for the last 8-10 months now, and he probably is not able to communicate with someone or the people that he's working with. And who has he been working with? He's been working with the likes of an Eric Simons in CSK and in that Super Kings franchise. Otherwise, the other tournaments that he plays are probably the T10s of the world. So who is he communicating there with to be able to bowl or get his form back? Is he speaking to Lasith long enough? Is he working with Lasith, in the off season or having a conversation with him? How does a bowler like him get back into form? Because there are very few and far bowlers in between that he can actually have a conversation with. That the only two that I can come up with in my head right now is Lasith and probably Sean Tate to a certain extent, because he also had that whippy, slingy kind of action that didn't traditionally come out of here. That came more, from here. Right. So
it's funny when you were explaining facing Malinga, I remember I did a piece once where I talked to all the guys who faced Sean Tate, and quite a few of them didn't have any issue. But every now and again, someone would say that it was like his body would twist away from you and then he would twist back around. And like you lost it. And as you said, it wasn't quite as low. But even then, if you look at Tate or Mitchell Johnson would be another one. Right. They're low in a different way. Like and even Pathirana, I think, bowls in a slightly different way than Malinga did the same thing. Mm. So it's a fascinating one. And I think he's like in his early 20s, right? Once he's 26, 27, he'll be able to go and watch some video and look at it and go, okay, I understand this. But when you're young, you're like, oh, was I lucky before? Like, was it just no one was picking me or whatever? And you start to get in your own head. And as you said, he would know. I mean, clearly he's changed his action. So he must know that it's coming out differently. He might not know, though, that he's raised his arm or anything else. It might be something to do with his wind-up or his landing on the crease that has changed. I just find it really fascinating because he's still a very, very good bowler. But clearly, things have changed quite a lot with him and he has to work it out. And it's really, really tough for those kinds of players now because he's, as you said, he doesn't have as many people to talk to. He also doesn't speak as common a language as other people, right? Like there's so many different, things. So anyway, Pathirana, be really fascinating to see how he goes in the next little while, because it wasn't that long ago that Pathirana and Rashid Khan were literally automatic bowlers in T20 cricket. And both of them are now having to just play with things. Do you know what an exit interview is?
Mm. Yes, I do.
Great. Let's do. I assume Rajasthan Royals won't make the playoffs. So I want to do an exit interview with Rajasthan Royals.
Go ahead. Right?
I want to pretend that you're the coach and that I'm the analyst or GM type guy. I'm the off-field guy and you're the on-field guy. What do we do with this squad going ahead? Because you're at the start of the mega cycle, right? They've gone all in on Indian batting, right? And there's some good players that should have made more runs or should have been more exciting than they were this year and just haven't worked. They've gone all in on Sri Lankan spin bowling, which again on paper should have worked a lot better than it has. Tushar Deshpande is just fallen off the map completely, right? Which is I didn't have that on as something that I was looking for. What do we do next year, Robbie? As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year, and I loved every part of it except for one. This little evil pin here, because I needed this to change my SIM card. And when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies, but even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, or one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, or one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally.
Well, I think we need to have a deep look into what our strategy is going to be. I think with the players we retain, because clearly we don't have enough of bowling in our strengths to be able to win championships, right? We don't have the likes of a Trent Bolt. We don't have the likes of an Ashwin or a Yuzi Chahal who did the bulk of the heavy lifting for us, especially with a new ball in the middle overs. Now, granted, even if Ashwin didn't get us wickets, he would keep it quiet. He'd bowl very tidily. And that is key. Today with a Hasaranga, we have one piece of that puzzle. But today we're going away from today is Matisha. What's his name?
Tikshana.
Tikshana. You know, doing the job that a Trent Bolt would do for us. Not necessarily. Tikshana is more a defensive bowler with the new ball than an offensive or a wicket taker at the new ball. And with the field restrictions, you know, I think he would be more useful outside of the power play. I don't think he, and we can look to perhaps get wickets with the new ball with him. And we need a new ball bowler who can get us wickets. Tushar Deshpande, before the good season he had last year, he was always going to be an expensive bowler, as in his numbers have dictated that he goes at about 8-9 runs in over, at bare minimum, but is able to get wickets. Today, how many of those bowlers can we afford to have? Right, if you have a Shardul Thakur, then you need to have an Avesh Khan in the ranks as well, right? You need to have a complementing bowler there to Tushar Deshpande. Tushar Deshpande will come and do really well for you if you have an informed Matisha Pati Rana with him.
Mm.
Then they can complement each other. Now, we don't have players like that here. Now, to complement someone like a Tushar Deshpande, you need someone to pick up wickets for you with the new ball. Today, your Sandeep Sharma is your key defensive bowler. We have a death bowler in him. But can you call Tushar Deshpande a death bowler? No, not at this point in time. I can't. So we need someone with a new ball who can get us wickets. We need to really have a relook at our batting. Yes, we're very, you know, heavily dependent on our Indian contingent, and which is more than you know, good enough as far as I'm concerned. But I think there needs to be a proper strategy in place. Today, I don't think we have a proper strategy in place. I think we need to, with Yashasvi and with Sanju, they're fit. Who is your number three? Who is your number four? And I think we need to have secured like numbers there. And we don't change that for a good 8-10 games at a time, which is something that we don't tend to do. We always look to change in every 3 or 4 innings. I think we need to move away from that strategy and move towards saying, okay, these are our number three, number four, number five, and then stick to that, right? Whether it's a Nitish Rana at number three, then you stick to Nitish Rana at number three. You don't keep moving them up and down, up and down, up and down. I think that's something that we need to move away from. And then if your number four is your Riyan Parag, and you say, okay, your 7 games, number four, Riyan Parag, stick to him. Your number five is your our wicketkeeper, Dhruv Jurel. And then number six, I think we're very thin on and heavily dependent on a Hetmyer alone at number six. You could have done well with having, and we're hoping that Hetmyer doesn't get injured through the whole season. But if he does get injured, who's our replacement there? Who replaces him? We don't have a replacement there. So I think these are areas that we need to address.
That's true. They do, the whole squad seems a little short of players.
Yeah, very short of players.
It's a fascinating one. So I agree with a lot of that. I think, so my thing is, how do we want to win cricket games, right? Like, you know, what is the strategy that we're going with?
We don't have the bowling to win. We don't have out-and-out match winners. And the only out-and-out match winners as far as bowling is concerned is you have Sandeep Sharma at this point in time and a Hasaranga, right? And how many games...
Jofra is a match winner?
Oh, Jofra as well. Yes, you do have Jofra Archer, but Jofra is just coming back into being Jofra Archer.
Yeah,
right? You've got to give him a player of his caliber that time and space to become him, right, again. And like in Indian cricket, you got to be... Like Jofra Archer has too much bounce and he's got too much happening with him like in Indian conditions for him to be like... uber aggressive and economical at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. Like today, even a Trent Bolt is going at 8.5 runs and over with a new ball. Correct me if I'm wrong, as in from what I understand, 8.5 runs in over.
He's certainly gone for more this year than he did last year.
He's gone for more this year, but you know, he's like, today, who are the guys getting you the wickets? Like, a Siraj is getting you the wickets, and why is he getting you the wickets? Where is he getting you the wickets? He's getting you wickets at the top of the innings, right? And how is he getting you the wickets? It's more LBW bold.
So how much of this is something as simple as Deshpande hasn't taken wickets this year?
Right? It is because as simple as
Jofra has had games, Hasaranga has had games. You know, so they've got two strike bowlers who have certainly, I wouldn't say either of them have had their greatest seasons, obviously, but they've both had moments where they've got where they've actually done something. Whereas you go through Deshpande. So Deshpande last year took 17 wickets at 25, right? The year before, he took 21 wickets, right? Those are massive amounts. And in 8 games this year, he has 6 wickets. And he hasn't even looked like Deshpande. Like, this is a bowler I've fallen in love with.
Last year compared to where is he bowled this year?
He's bowled, I have to go through it, but he's bowled with a new ball in both years, hasn't he? You know, so
He has gotten wickets, he's bowled with a new ball. How often has he bowled with a new ball this year? With a new ball?
He started with a new ball quite a few times this year. Yeah, no, I can look it up. But he's definitely, I know he has, because a couple of times he's been bowling at the other end to Jofra, and it's like at one end, you know, I don't know if you know the Richard Hadley joke, but at one end you've got the World 11 and the other end you have the Ilford Second 11. That's kind of what it's looked like when he's been bowling at times, right? I don't know if you know that the New Zealand players actually got Ilford Second 11 t-shirts to wear. But that, if... So I know he has bowled with the new ball. Let me just have a look at his over distribution this year as well. But even, I don't know if it's mattered when he's bowled. He doesn't seem to have any of the zip. I don't know if he's injured or if he's out of rhythm, because he's a late developing player, right? Like, he's not your normal sort of professional who's been playing for years. And, you know, like, he's someone who's a bit more of a late developing player and has suddenly come through. So this year he's bowled... Let's have a look. 36 balls in the power play this year, but he's gone at a strike rate of 211 when he's bowled them.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
So right? Every time he's bowled, I think there's been games he's supposed to bowl more in the power play, and he's been hit out of the attack.
Yeah, so and that is one of the things I think that the teams that used him in the previous years have dealt well with him. And the fact is that I think they used him better with the new ball, and then they persisted with him even though he was expensive. And that's one of the things. The likes of, like, today's Indian fast bowlers, even the likes of Navesh Khan or a Shardul Thakur or Tushar, all of these fast bowlers give away runs, but they get you wickets, right? Like today, Navesh Khan doesn't really care how many runs he's giving away as long as he's getting you out. And that's his whole mindset. His whole mindset is, and I keep wondering, how is this guy getting wickets? And then I realized, okay, it must be a mindset thing. He probably exists from a space where he thinks, I don't care how many runs I'm giving, as long as I'm looking to get a wicket every ball. Like, even yesterday, when you looked at, you know, when he bowled in the death to Surya, the first ball went for 6 with a slower ball into the deck, pulled in front of square for 6. The next ball, Yorker, slightly wide, and went straight to Mitchell Marsh in cover. And then he got him out. And it's like, okay, then you suddenly realize, okay, this guy is just looking to get wickets. He does not care how many runs he gets hit for, right? Now, it's easier to execute it when you do get wickets. But when you don't get wickets, then it becomes harder. It starts denting your confidence in yourself as a bowler. And then again, low in confidence, you execute lesser in the areas that you want to execute it. And then the minute that starts happening, you suddenly seem out of form, and you suddenly seem like the numbers you just called out now, bowling in the power play.
It's quite fascinating. I'm just having a look now compared to last year. So in the power play last year, he bowled 150 balls, but he went at 134 strike rate. So he's gone up over 80 in his strike rate. I think if it's 150, 160, you can keep bowling him and wait for the wickets to come in the power play. Once it gets to 2 runs a ball, it gets tough, right? And also, maybe this, I've got this theory that Chahar and Bolt don't help each other, right? Because they basically do the same role twice, and it means that one of them can't get the first over, right? And one of them can't get the third over, right? So the ball isn't going to swing as much for both of them because you have two of them there. I wonder if Jofra causes a similar problem with Deshpande, where he's actually bowling at a similar time, and he's going to get some more of those overs. And who are you going to give the ball to out of the two of them, right? You're always, especially in this form, you're definitely going to give it to Jofra. So there's the point being is, if you look at this team on paper, the bowling attack should be working better than it is, right? Like, so there's something wrong with the chemical makeup of this bowling attack, that it isn't working the way it is. The batting lineup hasn't fired.
When you look at this bowling lineup, it does seem very thin. Because see, with Jofra, you'll have to see off his first over. Like, his danger is that first over, right? You want to see that first over off. You want to make sure you don't give any wickets. You play circumspectly. You rotate the strike. You know, get him to, you know, play him to 100, 110 strike rate at best and see him off. The minute that new ball's done, that first over is done, the second over, you can apply pressure. Now, people are looking to apply pressure in that second over, irrespective of who's bowling that second over. Whether it's Teekshana or whether it's Deshpande, they're looking to put pressure on these guys.
And they're both getting hit, right? Like, it's not just one of them. They're both getting hit. Yeah.
Right? And then by the time the third over comes around, you've got to look into what, Jofra is doing, so you can take the attack to him a little bit more. So he can be a little bit more aggressive. So you know that the uppercut's always in play because he gets that little extra bounce. You just have to stay under the ball and probably use his pace a little bit. Any ground in India, slightly small for Jofra at the pace that he's bowling right now and the form that he's in, you can still score runs off him. And people are still scoring runs off him, right? Even in Bangalore, you could see, even though there was like that awkward bounce off that good length, people are still getting runs off him. In his second over in the power play. So, you know, he went off, I think, for 12 or 13 runs or 14 runs in that power play, in that second power play over to Virat, where one was an uppercut, the other one was just a pull off the front foot that went behind square for four. So people are still getting runs off him. So it's very hard to, you know, nail that power play for RR. And they need someone to be able to nail that power play and then execute with confidence. And the one person who was doing that really well for them was Trent Boult in the past, which MI have lapped up on. And I do agree with you. MI have two similar bowlers, and that's a problem of a plenty for them. Now, how do you separate the two of them is what becomes the issue with Deepak Chahar and Trent Boult. But here with RR, they don't have that option anymore. And they seem very thin. They feel like, you feel like you have to use the experience of a Sandeep Sharma to kind of stall things for you in that top six before bringing him back on for the death. And that in the middle overs, they have one bowler. The others you can really take to the cleaners.
I mean, so if you look at Deshpande and Teekshana, again, this is why, like, some of this is form, right? Because neither of them are bowling as good as they can bowl. But if you look at Teekshana, he didn't really bowl that much in the IPL last year. He actually hasn't bowled as much of recent times. I also think that as good a bowler as he is, he probably needs batters who haven't faced him all that much, or he needs conditions to be slightly in his favor, right? And Deshpande has been inconsistent. You know, that, you know, he sometimes he goes for a lot of runs, sometimes he takes a lot of wickets. Like, he is a little bit like that. But to get back to your overall point, like, there still has to be a theme. And I'm not sure what the theme of their side is. Like, I'm not sure when they sat down and had this team, I think they came up with a very good off-field thing of, if we invest in Indian batting, that will actually get us a very good core going for the next 3 or 4 years. We saw a young Delhi team do that a few years back, right? That's one good side of it. But how are we going to win games? It isn't really that obvious looking at this at the moment. So I almost feel like they need to sit down, you know, and who is it? Kumar, Rahul Dravid, whoever else is involved in the key decision-making over there, and has to literally sit there and go, how do we think we're going to win games? Because looking at this squad before the season and now, that's the one thing I don't understand from this squad, right? Like, unless you think that Jofra and Hasaranga is going to take so many wickets for you, and your batting is good, but I don't think it's so good it's going to dominate everyone else. And then the third thing is, as you talked about before, is the thinness. We feel that they're thin in bowling, and that's the five bowlers that they pick. They basically only use five bowlers all year, right? So, which is what they did every other year with the Royals. And this year it hasn't worked because the bowling isn't quite as solid. But also the backups look thin. Right. So you're kind of thin in two different directions. And there was something you said before, and I meant to chip in on it at the time. You said the bowling wins tournaments. Right. And both of us agree with that. Right. But the other thing that wins tournaments is flexibility, because halfway through a tournament, you've decided that Teekshana is going to be really important to you, and he just can't do what he usually does this year. You have to be able to pivot and change to a different style during that tournament to come up with a different plan. And if you don't have the ability to be flexible.
But who do they pivot to?
That's what I'm saying. This squad doesn't have a pivot, right? It's got no flexibility, this squad. If it didn't work exactly the way they wanted it to work, they were always going to be in this situation. So there is a chance that they would have had a record like, I don't know, Lucknow at the moment, where they're 5-5, where a few things went their way. Maybe Jaiswal, you know, went absolutely berserk at the top and Jofra took a few extra wickets. They're still a mediocre side if things had gone their way, right? And then the minute anything goes wrong, that's when you end up cratering the way they have this year.
Yeah, when you look at the when you look at their squad and you look at their team as well in general, just the general demeanor and the energy that they carry, like it just seems like they're not about it for some reason. They seem off. And I notice, like, you can see this in the pace of the youngsters, the guys in the, like, those peripheral players, right? Say, like, Shubham Hegde. Oh, sorry, Shubham. Shubham, what's his name? I can't remember his full name.
Dubey.
Shubham Dubey. Yeah. I'm saying Hegde. So you look at a Shubham Dubey, you can see it in his face is like the confidence is not there, or that there's something that's off, you know, and I feel like you can tell from the general demeanor of the squad in general that things aren't great at this point in time. And that can happen to teams and that can happen with franchises, which is why momentum, role definition, role clarity, your options and similar things happening with SRH. They have the quality of players within there, but I think just their the way they're going through the season and their templates that they've chosen without having it seems like they don't have a backup plan. They said, okay, this is how we're going to go this season, whether it works or it doesn't work. Fair enough, right? But what are the outcomes of the of that you're going to have out of it is going to be what you've chosen to do as well, right? Now, today you see it not working at all for them, right? This season it hasn't worked at all for them. It's just been an absolute hit or miss, and it's been that kind of a season. And you hope that it works for them, because when it does work, it's like mind-boggling stuff. But I think cricket dictates that it's not going to work like that all the time. You know, you're going to come up with one plan. If it doesn't work, you have to be able to pivot from that and just make do with the options that you have existing at that point in time. And they've chosen not to go that way, right? Today, the fact that they've chosen not to go with one guy to play that sheet anchor role, Travis Head to play that sheet anchor role is not the guy. For me, the guy to play that sheet anchor role should be the Reddy. Reddy should be one. Should be the one. Nitish Reddy should be the one playing that role, because he can play that role, right? You let him. He can play aggressively. He's a lot like Virat. You can also get him to play sheet anchor and make sure that he is around who that team revolves playing aggressively. Right? So you send him at number three, right? And then you have the top two. One of them goes early. Then he comes in and plays that role where he holds everything together and everyone revolves around him. They haven't gone to that, or anybody else for that matter, they haven't gone to that template at all. And when you lose 3 wickets in the first 6 overs, stats dictate and have shown and are enough proof that you lose 80% of your matches, right? So then it's counterintuitive to keep going that way, right? You'll end up getting a 150, but you can get to a 180 and give your bowling a better chance to defend that score if you actually have one guy playing that role for you. Like, if you lose wickets in the first 2 overs, in that first over you lose a wicket, immediately say, okay, we'll still be aggressive, but we'll get one guy to play that sheet anchor role where he plays at 120, 130 strike rate. And then everybody else revolves around him at 140, 150, 160, 180, 200 even. You know, for a guy who's hitting the ball well, 200 even. So then you're not taking away from the role of a Travis Head, who likes to play a certain way. That's his natural way of playing. Allow him to play that role, right? Rather than get him to play a sheet anchor role, which is not natural to him.
I'm not sure he's playing a sheet anchor role. I just think he's...
I don't think so. Maybe not. Yeah, yeah. But at least looks like... that's one of the things...
He just looks to me a little bit... He looks like the young Travis Head, where he's just like, oh, I'm not quite picking this ball up as smoothly. just on this, just to finish off the RR stuff, Tanmay put in a comment, which I now can't find. Oh, there it is. If it's a new ball problem for RR, why not use Faruqi? So they did use Faruqi for what? 3 games?
They are using Faruqi.
And I don't think he took a wicket, did he, in the 3 games so far? So that's kind of what I mean. Like, I think we can both say they've had problems with their side and with their selection and their draft and everything else. That's fair. I think that's fair criticism. But at the same time, they probably wouldn't have expected Faruqi, Tikshana, and Deshpande to be playing at the level that they have played this year. And one of those players playing better might have changed things quite dramatically for the team. And sometimes that can happen. It doesn't overcome all the other issues that I think is fair.
Nobody really expected Jofra to even turn up the way he turned up, right? As in Jofra, actually, we thought, you know, he'll still find his, go through his, you know, whole way of finding his feet again back into this one. But he's been a revelation for them. And despite, you know, like, yeah, there you go. Jofra has the highest false shot percentage amongst bowlers with 15 or more balls delivered, you know. So you know that he's having a great season, but you need someone else to kind of step up to the plate as well as far as fast bowling is concerned. Outside of you know, with Sandeep Sharma right now. He's been their saving grace, to be very honest.
And Sandeep's been okay, but he also he's had much better years than this before as well. Like Sandeep's been fine. Just on the Jofra one, I was talking to people from the England camp. They didn't think Jofra was going to be back to this level until June or July. Like everyone's a bit shocked that Jofra has come back at this. And if you have a look, there were signs in the Indian series at times when he was bowling okay, but then it would disappear, but it feels like he's in such a better rhythm. Anyway, let's go to our memes. I have no idea what the memes are. They wouldn't show me the memes. And so
love it.
Let's see what we have here today. Meme worthy.
Oh, my I know God. What he did there. Yeah. You know what he did there, didn't you?
No, I have no idea. Is he trying to drink out of the ass of the bottle?
Yeah, he is. So he basically bit off the ass of the bottle and then made a hole and he's just sipping through that now.
But why? Why would Quinton de Kock do this?
I know. PewDiePie
is a strange he's a bit of a strange cat though, isn't he? Like of all the people, if you showed me to this, I would do that. But it's like, is it possible someone else had drunk some of it and he didn't want to share the bottle with them? No, that's not possible.
No. The front of the bottle looks pretty like sealed to me. So just before when you go back and play that again, you'll see that he bit off a little bit at the end there. So that's why he did that. That's quite funny, dude.
So
yeah, there you go.
He does.
Yeah, and he spits off and then he's like, okay, I'm just...
Do you know what? That's what he's doing. Have you ever done something in front of your friends where you realize you've made a mistake and you just try and style it out?
Double down.
Something doesn't happen. Yeah, yeah. Holy. And it's like, that reminds me of the sort of person who's like, I do this all the time. Yeah, I'm always drinking out the bottom of the bottle.
Yeah.
In fact, on match days, I prefer to drink out of the bottom of the bottle, Sky. I don't know about the rest of you. Do we have any other memes?
Look at Devin's face there. He's like straight up just looking at him. He's like, yeah, this everyday thing is that QDK does.
Yeah. What have we got next? So Kay Williams said on TV being completely flummoxed by this. I'm more of an expert on this than most people because I spent a lot of my time on random cricket coverage of different countries where they're talking in English to you and then suddenly they go into a big speech in another language and you're still on camera. And you don't know what to do. And if you're a really good broadcaster, there's a way of kind of styling it out. You check your notes a couple of times. You turn over, you nod back at the person. But if you're not an experienced broadcaster and that happens to you, you end up in a situation where like you're just turning around in circles going, I don't know what to do here because I don't know what's happening at the moment. And so I've been there. I've had that happen to me before. Fun times. My first ever time on NDTV, I reckon they talked to me for about 2 minutes in English and then the rest of the show was in, what's NDTV? Hindi. Is that Hindi? Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, Hindi.
They just started talking in Hindi and I was like, okay, what do I do for the next 28 minutes? Cricket media used to be pretty simple. Find your favourite newspaper, head to Cricket Info, and maybe a blog you'd like. Now just finding the best stories and writing is a huge challenge. You already have a job. You just want to read about cricket. Well, that is what the best of cricket is currently doing. They go out daily to find the newest cricket coverage and the best stories from any publication in the world. And when they can't discover what they want, they also hire some of the best writers to produce their own great stories. You can get the best of cricket via their website or on WhatsApp. They find cricket's best stories and give them to you every day.
Listen, this is not foreign for us Indians as well. As when yeah. when Sidhu ji is actually speaking, there's a lot of like the Hindi and the his you know the vocabulary and the vernacular he uses. Basically, sometimes is just I'm like, okay, even as an Indian, someone who understands Hindi, how like what is he saying? You just catch glimpses of the words that he's saying, and we don't understand a lot of it. So a lot of Kane's expressions here is a lot of my expressions as well when I'm actually broadcasting with Sidhu Paji.
He's incredible. Quite understandable. Me and my friends back before WhatsApp or any of that sort of stuff, me and my friends would be watching cricket games in Australia and just texting each other his phrases. Because like his English phrases are just incredible. And like, I remember him, this is the one I remember because I texted every friend I had this and everyone loved this was, he said, like a butter through knife, right? Yeah. And the phrase would obviously be like a knife through butter. Knife. But the commentator called him out on it. The other commentator said, don't you mean? And he went, no. And like for years, I was like, again, like the whole styling it out thing, I was like, is he actually a genius? Right? Yeah. Or has he just not listened to what he said? And he's just like, anyway, I remember he used to talk about things like he'd say things like, the fox is cunning, but the chicken has wings. That I thought about that phrase, Robbie, for 20 years. Because I kept thinking to myself, does he know the chicken can't fly though? Like, I'm not saying the chicken, I get it. The chicken has wings, but the wings are useless if it can't fly. Like, I'd still rather be the fox in that situation. He really is. He's a next level genius on that sort of stuff. And I'm like, I never know how much of it is him misspeaking. It's just him talking off the top of his head or whether he prepares these things. But it really is. It's a completely different world.
He actually prepares these things.
Jared makes it better.
The amount of preparations that he's got. He's got books that he's written with stuff like this, and it's fascinating the amount of preparation the man goes through.
So in Australia, we had a guy called Max Walker, who way before your time, and you might not have come across Max Walker. And Max Walker, basically, when he retired from cricket, he did a little bit of commentary and it didn't quite work. And he ended up as a very famous person in Australia, but like a TV host. But he also wrote like about 8 books. Like, and these books, there's almost like a Sidhu like thing of the books because they're absolutely nuts. Like, not a single one of these books make any sense at all. That they will be called things like, I have to find one of these books just to show you how stupid they are. How to Hypnotize a Chook, How to Kiss a Crocodile, How to Puzzle a Python. Like, it's this like, and I remember we were in the country with my wife and we went to like an antique store. And I said, come over here, have a look at all these books. And she's looking at them. And she's like, why are you showing me these books? And I said, this guy played cricket for Australia and he's like really famous as a cricketer. And this is what he did after he retired. These ridiculous books, which sold a fortune. Like he made more writing a book about how to hypnotize a chook than he actually did playing cricket for Australia, which I think tells you a lot about the game at that stage. Anyway, we've got a couple of super chats to finish up here. What have we got here?
Are we done with the memes? That's it. Oh.
I think there's only 2 memes today, unless I'm wrong. Is there a third? Well, they've taken us off the meme cam, right? We had the meme cam a minute ago and we changed. So I think we've just got the 2 today.
Yeah.
I Love Mutton Biryani says, GT winning IPL with only 3 batters will be the greatest achievement. On a side note, can any other IPL team go invincible whole season like 03, 04 Arsenal? So just on the second one, it's really hard to be unbeaten in a team in T20 cricket just because of due drop catches, the short part of the game, the toss and all those things. Chances are you're going to lose a game. Even if you're really dominant, you're probably going to lose a game all the way through. The other thing is, the Gujarat batting, I know a lot of people are worried about the fact that their top 3 has done all the work. And there's always the damage in and you and I have seen this happen before, where teams dominate with 3 or 4 batters. And then what happens is they get to the finals and those 3 guys
get caught up there.
Yeah, and it changes. Mm. But we have also seen teams, I think, 2007 Australia World Cup team, where like the top order basically just carried the entire tournament and it didn't matter. Like, it can go both ways. If you have a top order that is, the word I'm using for their top order is automatic, right? It probably someone from that top 3 should make runs in the important games. But it's a tough thing to do because there's a lot of other players in that team who haven't been tested all that much and haven't been up the order. And it does happen sometimes.
Yeah, I think the next 2 games are going to dictate where GT's campaign is going to go this year. I think in the next 2 games, if they lose the next 2 games, it could derail their whole campaign. I feel if they win the next two games, then, you know, I think that championship contending side.
Well, Rajasthan and Sunrisers are the next two games. So on paper, those are two wins, right?
Yeah.
On paper. Yeah. Yeah. But on paper, they're two wins. What I was going to say, though, is if you lose one of those or both of those, you stop believing in yourself very, very quickly as a side, right? Mm. Like if you lose one of those games, that things can change a lot. Aditya says, he says nothing because I can't click on his button. There he is. Mm. Punt in IPL 2017-2019, 1,500 runs at an average of 38, a strike rate of 107. Will we ever see that player again, or is he now a lost cause in T20s? I think I know your answer.
When I look at Rishabh Pant today as a player, I find the batter Rishabh Pant lost in confusion at this point in time. And I think there's a serious lack of clarity of role, of where he fits in as a batter. And I think there have been, you know, obviously people and stakeholders within that side who've added to the confusion a little bit. The one game where he didn't go to bat and then sent Abdul Samad ahead of himself with 3-4 overs to go just felt like, okay, the kid has no clarity whatsoever and he needs to figure it out. And I think anyone speaking to him at this point in time will only be adding to the confusion. And I think everything has to just finish and then the dust needs to settle and then he needs to figure out a plan of action because right now, not working.
So in that run, he had a true average of 12 over expected and a true strike rate of 37. So it's phenomenal numbers. Here's my thing with him. I know a lot of fans at the moment are really worried about him. And you get quite a lot. People will say, oh, why has he never worked as a white ball player? And I'm like, well, he has worked as a white ball player. Like, I can understand that his overall numbers look bad, but we've seen him work. It's very important to know that most batters are at their absolute best between the age of 27 and 32, right? And he's 27 now. I think he would be silly to say that he's never going to have another good season again, right?
Oh, no.
And that he might start to work it out. I think, and you would know him a lot more personally than I would, but, you know, having had conversations with friends of his and people around the game, he's not always been one of those automatic professionals that does everything right. He's so gifted that a lot of it has been on his talent. And also, something you talked about before, you talked about role clarity this year. Well, what about the fact that when he was great, he was just going in and whacking the ball everywhere. And then Ricky Ponting tried to turn him into an anchor for a little while, right? Like you take a player away from their prime thing. When he gets to the Karan Nair thing is a really important one, right? And there's so many Karan Nairs in this world. Sometimes being out of the system and going off and working out who you are on your own is the best thing. When you're Rishabh Pant, you can't do that. Ishan Kishan can't do that. They're at the top level the whole time. They're going to continue to be at the top level, right? And they're going to have to work it out with the cameras on them. That's a very different situation to the level below players who can go off and sort things out. But a lot of players at 28, 29 work out what works for them best. And then that's what they do until their body gives up.
Well, yeah, I think, to be very honest, I think Rishabh Pant, like even when India won the World Cup in 2024, where did Rishabh Pant play? He batted number 3 when India won the World Cup. That's his position in white ball cricket. As far, if you ask me, that's his position. And he just has to go there and smash the ball. That's it. Doesn't need to do anything. Doesn't need to, like even that game against CSK where he got runs. After a point, he was just trying to hit the ball for 6. You know, he likes playing the role of a match winner where he absorbs pressure and takes the team through and finishes. And seems like he enjoys that, but where I think he'll thrive the most, I think, is that number 3 position where he just goes there and smashes the ball. Even when he got 100, I think, in the IPL, I think he got it at number 3, if I'm not wrong. I could be wrong, but...
So basically, what you're saying is he should be Rahul Tripathi, right? Like, as in, he should be like the S-tier version of Rahul Tripathi. But you just say, look, forget about whether a wicket goes early or a wicket doesn't go early.
He should be
You just go in and be Rishabh Pant, and then the rest of the game will go around you. And so here's another one for you, because you know a lot about leadership and everything. There's a lot of players who, when they become captain, try to bat like captains, right?
Yeah, man, I hate
and
that.
Actually,
like, you don't.
You want to bat like yourself,
that.
Right?
Yes. Like, you look at Sky. Like, for me, that's what I really enjoy about Sky. Sky is like, listen, and even Rohit Sharma, for that matter. He's like, he moved away from a pattern or a template that works for him and fit himself into a new pattern, which is freaking amazing. It's very hard for people to do that, but he actually did that, right? He actually he went and said, there is a particular way I've scored runs. I've scored double hundreds and I've scored 200s in ODI cricket. But I'm moving away from that template. I'm going to go to this new template and make it work for me because this is how I want to lead, right? And this is what I think is the way cricket's played right now. And he's moved to that and he plays like that. Suryakumar Yadav is like, irrespective of me being captain or not, this is how I'm going to play.
Yeah.
Like Rishabh Pant is one of the reasons cricket is being played the way it's played today. Like he plays uber aggressively. Yeah. That's who he is as a batter, right? He brings the unorthodox into cricket, right? And has made cricket what it is today. It's one of those roles in the transition of the game to what it is today. Now, why does he have to go when he's being a captain and go and play like an absolute anchor role? Like he should be doing what Nicholas Pooran is doing for LSG today at number three.
No, that's a good one.
He should be going at number three, and then you send Pooran at number four because Pooran's in form. And then you send Rishabh at three and just go, bro, just go and hit the ball, man. Watch the ball, hit it. Play how you want to play. You want to fall down and play cricket, fall down and play cricket. You want to reverse slap the fast bowler, reverse slap the fast bowler. It does not matter. Just bat the way you bat. If you don't score runs, it's fine. We have Pooran coming in at number four. He's anyway scoring runs.
No. I think that's good. This one's for you because I don't want to mispronounce any of these
Sugamana.
Words.
Seve. Bangar Sugamana, hope you're doing well as well. He's asked me in Malayalam if I'm keeping well. Ippo Sugamana.
Lentils says, unrelated, but based on IPL, your fourth pace India, fourth Ooh. Pacer for India in England test. Oh, so I wouldn't worry about the IPL, like as in that's just a form thing and we're talking about months away. I want to know what happened in Australia when Prasheed Krishna, I saw him play in the A game and I was like, oh, he'll be interesting in this test series that it didn't happen. I still want to see how he bowls in England, especially if England wickets, it's been quite a dry summer or start of the summer to England. I don't think the summer has actually started in England, but they're playing cricket at the moment. I'm quite interested in having a fourth seamer around the camp who is someone like Prasheed Krishna with a very different kind of skill set to everyone else's. I've been a big fan of him for a long time. So interested to see how they think about that. And of course, if you're looking at swing bowlers, and Ashdeep is the other one. Can Ashdeep be a proper sort of test bowler is the other one I'm going to have a look at. There's every chance that India might have the better seam bowling attack than England in this series, because England is kind of in a transitional period where they're not, I don't think they're 100% sure who their second, third and best seams. It's different if Jofra plays and if Jofra is fit. But if Jofra doesn't play, then they've kind of got like, there's, you know, Kaas and, you know, those sorts of levels of player. I'm not saying they're bad players, but that's not quite Shami and Bumrah or anything else, right? Like there is a big, big difference from that.
I think, to be very honest, I think Akashdeep would be, if he bowls the way he bowled in Australia, I think he'll be a handful.
Yeah, he's a good bowler too.
But yeah, he can be a handful. Although I thought he was extremely unlucky in Australia to not gotten more wickets than he gotten.
Agreed.
Harshit was pretty impressive, but I think he was a little bit on the expensive side in Australia. Prasid, again, expensive. I think Prasid went at 4.5-5 runs and over in Australia. But Prasid, if he's bowling the way he's bowling right now, the areas that he's bowling right now, oh man, without a doubt, Prasid.
Yeah. Harshit's an interesting one for me because I actually think he could be a very good bowler in England one day, but he needs to just be a little bit more tight. So you can actually have a situation where Akashdeep is like your second or your third bowler if Siraj doesn't work. And then you can play around with the fourth seamer if you want a little bit more further on, because they can take a risk with one of the other two or other three guys if they want to going ahead. Last super chat is... Sudarshan says chances of RCB bottling this season. I don't think they're in a situation at the moment where
I don't think they will.
They are dominating the season so much because I think their batting has probably done fine this year, but I thought there was more explosiveness available in their batting that they haven't quite mined yet, right? So there are elements that I think they can get more out of their batting, and their bowling, their two wicket takers have overperformed, as I said before, because they're not massive wicket takers. So I would assume they could have a couple more big bangs with their batting, especially that middle order that really hasn't exploded the way that it's designed to at the moment, but they might go back to being more of a defensive bowling unit as things come up. It's a solid side. I don't have any massive issues with it at the moment. I don't know how many more times Will Jacks is going to be their best bowler, but you know, he's probably already bowled better this year than I've seen him bowl since he took a bunch of wickets.
But Will Jacks with Mumbai, isn't he?
Oh no, sorry, he's gone to Mumbai. This is mega auction brain. Is yeah. doing my yeah, head in, man.
I know what you mean.
Who's the spinner? I mean, oh, Suryansh. Suryansh. I think he's like his bowling. I think he's been.
He's actually been bowling pretty well, huh? He's actually been like a lot of self assuredness in the way he's bowled in the last five or six games. I've liked his attitude and the aggression with which he's bowling, and he's bowling to get wickets, and he's hitting the right areas. I think he's nailed it with his. With the understanding of his own bowling that, okay, he needs to be really accurate for him to function and work as a bowler. And I think he's bowling the right areas. Will they bottle it this season? I don't see it happening because when I look at this RCB side, on a whole, they look like a unit. And after a really long time, I find this an RCB side playing as an absolute unit rather than small groups coming together. You look at their batting, you look at their bowling, you look at their fielding even. They feel like they're playing as a bunch and they're not playing as small groups that do well together. Like otherwise, you'd see a couple of three batters doing well. You see two bowlers doing well. You see a couple of fielders doing well. But this time with RCB, you see the entire group and you look at everyone and everyone's coming into the party. Like even their left-arm fast bowler. Why am I just the names? I'm forgetting names today, man. It's weird.
Yash
Dayal's bowling really well in the death.
Even as I said him then, I was like, "Is he play for another team?" Because I was afraid I was going to mega auction brain it again. But yeah, Yash Dayal. No, I think
Yash
Dayal's
been bowling really well.
What I like about them is I don't think sometimes you see a team like Lucknow early in the year. We decide I can't see how this consistently goes through 15 games, 16 games, 17 games. Right with RCB. As I said before, I think their bowling could just come down a level, certainly from wicket taking, right? It might come down a slight level. Whereas I actually think their batting can still go a little bit further. So that's actually a good place to be. You don't want to be in a situation
to be very
where
honest,
you
yeah.
don't have anywhere to go.
I agree with you. I think the fact that their middle order hasn't necessarily come off, and they're 10 matches down. They came off in the first half of those 10 matches. In the second half, they didn't do anything. And then now at the back end, if they begin to come off, because which they'll be primed to come off. The Rajat Patidars of the world will want to come off. Like, you know, you'll want your middle order to really come to the fore. And I think they will come off. And I think it's a good sign that they haven't come off in the middle part of the tournament, because in the back end, then you know that they will really come off.
Yeah, I just think the way that their team is set up hasn't quite played the way that they thought it would. As Varun just put up the stat about how many wickets Krunal Pandya has taken, right? Like it's actually played differently to how they've set it up. And so that for me still says that there's something there. Anyway, that's it for us today. He is Robbie. I am Jared. Please like, subscribe, comment, do all those things, share this. We're here to stay, this podcast, until one of us picks the other one out. Because I keep slagging him off too much for how many dot balls he faced. But thank you very much to everyone again. And we'll see you again roughly around this time next week.
Yes.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, Go to minvo.pro to cut it.